Hi everyone and welcome to the CFG podcast. For this edition, our policy manager Richard Sagar was joined by Nikki Deason, the International Finance Director at Amnesty International and our outgoing Chair of Trustees.
And they both go into great depth around the publicly documented challenges that Amnesty have faced recently. It's a really honest and insightful chat and we feel really lucky to have had Nikki join us for this one.
Yeah, so Richard started off by asking Nikki for some background about her role at Amnesty.
I've been at Amnesty for about 6 years, and as my mum said when I got the job, Amnesty is like the stone in the shoe of the rich and powerful around the world. And I think it's a really important organisation. I love working for Amnesty. We try to hold governments and other powerful people to account and make sure that they remember the basic human rights that everybody should be entitled to. So at Amnesty, I'm responsible for finance, workplace, and risk management. And Amnesty is quite a complicated organisation. I work for the International Secretariat that's based here in London, in Exmouth Market. And we are funded primarily by our partner countries around the world. So Amnesty Netherlands, Amnesty USA, Amnesty Australia, Amnesty UK, which is based in Old Street, around the corner. They raise the money, they do the hard work of getting the Amnesty members and raising the income, which they then pass to us. And we spend on human rights research and campaigning here in London and all around the world. So the International Secretariat has offices in the Global South. And we also have partner countries in the Global South as well. So it's quite a complicated structure. And I'm responsible for managing finance, risk, and workplace across our offices in the International Secretariat, and also for coordinating best practice around the Amnesty countries in the world.
Yeah, so alongside the really important work you've been doing recently, of course, and in relation not just to CFG but Amnesty, perhaps more pertinently for this discussion, there's been some news recently, particularly in places like civil society, third sector, etc., around a kind of financial shortfall. Is it worth giving a bit of context around that and what the current situation is?
Yeah, so I think the first inkling that we had that there were problems was last August, so August 2018, when we got some notifications from some of our partner funding countries that actually the funds that they had been forecasting to give us last year and this year were actually not going to be as much as in the forecasts for various reasons. And so we then realised that we basically had a gap in last year's budget and a gap in this year's budget. So what we tried to do immediately was put cost savings targets in place for last year. So for the last 4 months of 2018, we were all trying to save money of our last year's budget wherever we could. Unfortunately, by the time we sort of realised we had to do that, we were quite a long way through the year. So most of the expenditure had already been committed, and it was actually really difficult for most people to make significant savings. So then in February this year, that was when we got our final our results for 2018, and that was when we realised we hadn't achieved the cost savings and our income had been less than we'd forecast. And also our income for this year that we're in now was also less. Mm-hmm. So in about at that time we realised that we had a £7 million gap in our budget for this year that
just,
we were already
just in. How much is the budget overall for the
Yeah, it's about £75 million.
Yes, yeah, so it's about 10% or so.
Yeah, so significant. And we also realised that looking ahead to 2020 that we were seeing that we would have a £9 million gap in 2020 as well. So yeah, all of this was lived out in the public domain and mentioned in The Guardian, etc. And that was the point that we realised cost savings, you know, trying to save on travel and consultants and sort of flexible costs was not going to meet our budget gap, so we had to do something much more drastic than that.
Yeah, so in terms of, it's quite interesting in terms of the process you mentioned, it was in February you first heard the news, and so suppose an FD or someone in a similar situation is listening in, what processes were undertaken, and if you look back and suppose you were to do it again, what might you have perhaps done differently, what do you think you did well in relation to that, and how how might you learn that?
I think you're always pulled in two very different directions when you get in this situation, and certainly for me there was a number of there are a lot of different stakeholders across Amnesty, and they were all at different stages of understanding why we were in this situation and how we needed to get out of it. So I would say the senior leadership team were obviously sort of at the front of the train, and they were having to make decisions about what are we going to do to get ourselves out of this situation. So there was a lot of pressure on me to actually come up with, together with my team, options and scenarios, and sort of to try to design a financial recovery plan that would be operationally acceptable and also would achieve the balanced budget that, that we needed to achieve. We spent a lot of time on that, myself and my team, and then at the same time we were also pulled sort of back in a way by the stakeholders who hadn't yet got on board with why we're in this situation. And so we were also spending a lot of time trying to answer questions, present at different internal meetings, and to explain like what were the causes of this. So I think myself and my team also were feeling like, was it somehow our fault? I mean, I don't think it was finance's fault. I really strongly believe that finance are the best people to help an organisation out of this situation. However, I think at some level, all the members of my team were sort of feeling somehow this is our fault. So there was that sort of emotion going on as well. So I think what we did well was trying to balance all of those different things and trying to hold to the task of putting a financial recovery in place and understanding the urgency of that and the fact that we needed the board to make a decision on that in May. So the board meet at certain times. If we hadn't got a decision in May, then we would have, you know, more time would have gone past before we could have addressed the problem. So I think that was really good that we focused on that board meeting and we did as much scenario planning and analytics as we possibly could for that meeting. And I think we didn't have any choice about the communication side and the fact that we had to keep trying to bring everybody else along and help them understand where we got to and how we'd got here. I mean, I suppose in retrospect, maybe I could have done more in terms of planning the resources that were required for this. So actually treating it as a project. And making sure that we had sufficient resources or what work could we deprioritise. We did deprioritise some things, but perhaps we were still a bit optimistic about how much time would be needed.
So if another organisation was going through a kind of similar situation, perhaps maybe smaller, maybe larger, so one of the key lessons, it seems, is around A, communication, making sure everything's clear. You did a great job of scenario planning on the sounds of things, so making sure that these different, here's the possible outcomes to the board, and then it's your decision to, of course, choose which of those is most palatable. But then treating it as a kind of separate project seems to be something that was really useful, and kind of prioritising it over other things. And any kind of tips around that, around how you might set up the kind of project, if you were starting from scratch on it, what the steps you might take, etc.
Yeah, so I think it is really treating it as a project and saying, okay, what is the who's going to be on the project team? What resources do we actually need to do this? And who's going to be involved in the governance of this project? And sort of tying into your last point, the communications plan. So actually having a resource responsible for the communications up front and saying, okay, so we're going to have to communicate for Amnesty. We're going to have to communicate to our staff, we're going to have to communicate to the union, we're going to have to communicate to our Amnesty partner countries around the world and the board. And so sort of treating, looking at all those different stakeholders and making sure that we've got a plan in place for how to bring them all along.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds right. You mentioned one stakeholder, which was unions. What's happening there and any next steps and thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the union have a very strong view, which is we could do something else other than make these redundancies. Mm. From my perspective, I don't think we have got any other options. I feel that we've really looked into all of the different possibilities. We've really shaved all of our costs down to the minimum. We've done everything we can to maximise our income as well. We haven't stopped our fundraising investment. We're continuing to invest in fundraising to, you know, to grow for the long term, which we need to do. Our reserves are extremely low, so we're currently operating with negative free reserves, and nobody wants to be in that situation. Yeah. We have got a 5 million overdraft facility, which is, you know, a really good backstop, but we need to keep within our, we need to start to build our reserves for financial stability in the future.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that by the end of the year we will have about 2 million reserves, which is about 1.5 weeks of reserves. So from my perspective, we haven't got anywhere else to look, really, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, 'cause that was one comment that I saw in a recent civil society piece that unions had made, that you could dip into reserves to mitigate these effects, but it sounds like if you're negative free reserves, that's certainly not an option. In fact, I'm sure you know from with the CFG hat on that, of course, even 1.5 weeks is relatively low. All things, it's pretty low actually, all things considered. So it's not as if these are excessive and you've got extra cash lying around there. So no, it doesn't look like that's an option to do that.
And I think from a financial perspective, the stark reality is that our income has been lower than our expenditure this year, and we need to sort of fix that.
Something needs to
which
change,
is a structural problem, and unfortunately needs a structural solution.
And speaking of kind of structural solutions, you mentioned a financial recovery plan. So you've touched on some of the process on that. What does that look like, and how do you gain buy-in, I suppose, from the organisation as a whole when putting those forward?
Mm. Yeah, so I think basically what we did was we looked at every different line on our income and expenditure account, and we looked at and also on our balance sheet, really. So we looked at, from the income side, you know, how can we maximise our income? And we're very lucky because we're part of a global movement.
Yeah.
So we could actually ask our partner countries for financial contributions, and they did give us financial contributions, which has been really helpful. Then looking down our costs, all of our different types of costs. So if we look at our staff costs, you know, that's sort of the balancing figure that came out at the end. Mm. So we left that to the end, and then we looked at all of our other different types of income and costs and how to maximise our income and minimise our costs. So on our activity costs, we know that we have to pay the rent of our buildings around the world. So we've got certain aspects that are fixed, and then we've got certain aspects that are flexible, and we've put projects in place, for example, a travel savings project, looking at trying to get deals with the hotels that we use around the world, ensuring that people book their travel more than a month in advance. Mm. So for each different type of line, we've looked at how we can maximise that. In terms of our building in London, we've rented out a little part of the building, and we're looking to see whether we might be able to rent out a greater part by increasing our flexible working and sort of desk sharing options.
So what's the kind of timescales involved with the recovery plan? How long a period are we looking at, and what kind of savings are we hoping to make over that time?
Yeah, so we've started we've started achieving cost savings this year already.
Great.
So some of the aspects, like the travel cost savings, we can put in place immediately. Mm. And then obviously the staff restructure takes time. We had two tragic staff suicides, so we're really, really conscious of staff well-being. And when we've put the restructure plan in place, we've tried to be done in a way that has provided support for all staff who are affected, given people time to sort of understand the situation and get themselves in the best possible personal place for whether they're staying or leaving and what happens next.
Yeah.
So that has taken more time. So in terms of the staff cost savings, those are envisaged to come in from January. And then if we are able to, for example, rent out part of the London office, that is a bigger project as well, because we would need to look at getting air conditioning, etc. So that will probably take, you know,
more time to see. You mentioned around some of the tragic incidents that have happened internally with kind of work colleagues, and of course there was a report not too long ago which branded, you know, kind of toxic work culture in the organisation. I just want you to, I suppose, comment on from your perspective what it's been like during this kind of difficult period with the organisation, and how you felt you've been supported throughout that process.
Yeah, I think that Amnesty is an amazing organisation. As I say, I love working here. I think my colleagues are really caring and warm, and you know, there are many supportive people around the organisation. I think it has been a really difficult time, and the fear and the uncertainty is really difficult for people. So at times, you know, it's been hard. I think what we've tried to put in place is, so we've put in place peer-to-peer counselling and other sort of counselling support that's available. Also, a lot of workshops have been run for people to help them deal with the emotions. So some people obviously get emotional under pressure, other people get very task focused. So it's sort of trying to understand those different responses and how we can all support each other.
Yeah. Of course, not only have these issues affected the organisation as a whole, it's also had an impact on your own team. And so, as not just in your role as International FD, but also as line manager, how have you dealt with that within your team and personally for some of these issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really difficult process. It was always about the balance between confidentiality and involving people. So trying to bring my team leaders on board with, you know, that because they worked in finance, they realised quite quickly what was going to be happening, and sort of realised that we were going to have to try to identify roles, and we were held to disestablishing 5 roles from within the team. So that was my decision, and that had to be my decision. Then sort of working with the team leaders in terms of how best to explain that, and really trying to have those meetings up front and have an open door policy. So making sure that although it was a difficult process for me myself to go through, it was more difficult for those team members who are feeling out of control of the process and being told, you know, this is the situation and your job is at risk. So really trying to make sure that first and foremost, I was providing support to those team members, and however angry they were with me, and some of them were very angry, that they could voice that and that I could listen, and although there were certain things I couldn't change, but that at least I could help understand and help them sort of find their way through the process. And in particular, having the counselling available has been great, and sort of really trying to push people towards that, even if people didn't think they needed it, has been great.
So obviously it wasn't too long ago, but there's been some time since those initial conversations have happened. Do you feel that with the tools that have been provided, like, you know, the counselling, the peer support network, etc., has that led to a slightly different relationship between yourself and people you line manage? Have things improved? Have things changed over that time, you think?
I mean, I feel that we're a really, really close team and really supportive of each other. I mean, I feel so supported by my team, and I hope that I'm also providing them support, you know, despite of the very difficult situation. And of course, everybody deals with stress in different ways. Mm. And we were sort of lucky in a way that some people, although it was very sad, very strong people, immediately went and got another job and left. Mm. But what that has meant is that there have been a lot fewer compulsory redundancies needed. So, you know, that really helps.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not, it should say, and this is not unique in the sense of a number of fairly large INGOs have been through a process where there's been challenges around the work culture, etc. You've touched on some of the things you've done. Is there anything you think, if there was kind of one thing you had to pick as being the most, from your experience, most useful that has been put in place? Is there anything that kind of comes to mind? Was it something you've already mentioned? Was it something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been to a couple of workshops and sessions that have really helped me to understand the way that different people process stressful situations. And I think something else that's been really helpful for me is mindfulness. The reptilian brain and the mammalian brain, they're really good for sort of autopilot.
Yeah, and the amygdala.
So they, you know, we wouldn't be able to do without them because they help us get dressed and make a cup of tea. However, they tend to take over at times when they shouldn't. And so mindfulness really helps you to sort of like push those responses back and say, actually, what do I intentionally want to do here? Because we often like have an immediate reaction and then regret it afterwards.
Yeah.
So mindfulness is really about helping us sort of be more in the moment and be aware of our feelings and the fact we might want to lash out at somebody, and being aware of that and being able to stop that. So I think that's been really helpful.
That's really interesting. So I think it's become increasingly popular with organisations and prominent in the press more widely. But it's great to see that it's actually been effective in the kind of workplace as well. And alongside
somebody, one of my colleagues has actually set up a weekly mindfulness session that anybody can join, either remotely or in person. Just a half hour session, but it's really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Alongside things internally, which have helped you, of course, you are, as mentioned, you've been previous chair of CFG and of course engaged with CFG. Is there anything that you think that CFG members could you know, to help with these issues? Is there anything that you found particularly useful and any resources you tapped into to help that?
I'm an avid reader of Finance Focus and there's often been articles in there about you know, finances and how to best manage your finances, particularly making sure that you've got the assurance that you need to have in place and that you maintain your internal controls and that you stand up for the resources that you need to do that. So especially if you are having staff cuts, to be able to say, well, in finance, this is mandatory, like this is non-negotiable, we need these resources. I think the other things that I found really helpful at CFG have been Inspiring Financial Leadership course, which I just found was brilliant, and the alumni from that, and being able to still meet and network and share. We had a session recently on stress and resilience, and they're the new module is going to involve a module on stress and resilience as well. So definitely recommend that if you haven't done it already. And also the mentoring program, so the training that I received when I volunteered to become a CFG mentor was really, really good.
Well, I think that's really important to mention. Obviously CFG's has a number of, you know, we have our helplines, we have trainings, events, etc. But there is also this kind of alumni and this kind of peer network of people who are there to kind of support through this. And it's something that CFG's looking at more and more of how we can essentially other colleagues and other peers to talk about these issues, because I think they'll only become more prominent as time passes. Is there anything else that you'd like to touch on?
I just wanted to say that Tim Sigala did a seminar last night about mindfulness and sort of the importance in our own learning and development and how also it fits with coaching in terms of helping us develop and those around us.
Nick, it's been a real pleasure. I'm sure it's been obviously excellent that you've been so open with these challenges and some of the issues that are faced, but it looks like that they're being addressed, and of course onwards and upwards, I'm sure, for Amnesty. And we'd love to talk to you again on the other side to see how these challenges have been met as well. So thanks very much.
No, I feel like we're in a much better position now. We've got a financial plan in place. So to anybody out there that's struggling with their finances, it's worth it in the end. It's worth holding on to remembering to be prudent and be cautious when you're putting the plan in place. Even though it's harder to get it approved, what it means that now is that actually I can sort of relax a little bit and think, we've got the plan, it's on track, and we are going to get back to a position of financial sustainability and be able to carry on the brilliant work that Amnesty does.
Decent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard.
Cheers.